fine. That music sounded different just now than it did when I prepared it, but who cares? I want to tell you about last night. I watched a show, a new show called The Mentalist. The Mentalist, it's a regular kind of police story about murders, but the appeal of the show, the appeal lies in the personality of the main character. Now, I hated Columbo. I didn't like that guy, but I like this guy. I like him. He's played by a guy named Simon Baker. He's an Australian, but he pretends to have an American accent. And the distinctive thing about this guy is that he's very charming. He's extremely charming. He's always low-key, and he's lighthearted, even when he's on a serious mission. Now, that approach didn't work too well for George W. Bush. The guy was always smiling, but nobody liked him anyway. But it works like a charm for this guy. You always feel up when he's on the screen. I do, and so should you. And I was thinking about, you know, if you saw a guy like this in an interview, who wouldn't like to work with him? I'd have a hard time not hiring him, even if he didn't have the skills we needed. And I would push my client to really consider him, no matter what. And you know what? Put that aside for a second. I want to take you back to a time I read a book called Tales of Mystic Joy. I read a book with that title. It's true. It's about a group of people who feel loss and pain, just like you and me, but they believe that to live your life the right way, you've got to be happy. So no matter what happens, they choose to focus on whatever is good, and they take a cheerful approach to life. And I was thinking to myself, hey, that's terrific. Maybe it's for me, too. And then I got an email from a fan. Don't worry, I won't go on too long. I got an email from one of my fans, and it said, Animal, I just listened to your last show, and you are the Jack Bauer of recruiting radio, and I want to tell you to keep up the good work. And I said, yes, it's true. It's fine and dandy to be everybody's pal. It's fine and dandy to be happy all the time, but sometimes you need a guy who's going to barge into the room and say, give me that information. I want it now. We've got an audience out there, and I'm going to count to three, and if you don't spit it out, you're not going to leave this show alive. We do. We need people like that. And that's why my guest for today has ended up with me. She's an HR professional, and everybody knows that it's very tough to get through to these guys. They know they're a cost center, so they feel their jobs are always on the line. They're afraid to take any risks. That makes them rigid. That makes them bureaucratic, and everybody hates them. And that makes them retreat even further into themselves. I'm almost done, I told you. Normally, you want to stay as far away as you can from people like that. But we recruiters, we try, but we can't stay away from them altogether. Sometimes we gotta talk to them. But how do you get through to somebody in HR without turning them against you? Hopefully, the answer is going to come to us today when our guest, Susan Strayer, speaks to me. Susan, are you there?
I am.
Great, great. Second time on the show. Nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to do a little intro of you, then we'll get right into the questions. You are, correct me if I'm wrong, a corporate director of talent acquisition. You're responsible for the global deployment of talent acquisition strategies, and you used to be the director of talent acquisition, and it sounds like that was just more project-oriented, but probably a lot of the same thing. You are the author of a job hunting book called The Right Job Right Now. Your website is www.susanstrayer.com, and your last name is spelled Strayer.com. You've got an MBA and an MA in HR development. Am I right?
That's it.
Now, Susan, I have to confess something. I don't know anything about the topic we're dealing with today. So you know what, Susan? I want you to help me help you. Help me help you, Susan! I'm begging you! Are you going to help me?
I think I can.
Okay. Just a little bit more of the intro. I saw you got a new picture on Twitter. It's kind of like the old picture, only it's in color. Am I right about that?
Yeah, and it probably shows me a little bit older than when I had that first picture taken.
I think you look very attractive in that picture, but I have one complaint. It's the way you do your lipstick. Now, I don't like it when people smear it all over themselves either, like a clown. But on your lower lip, you didn't go all the way down. I mean, I like full lips. Why not? Is that a technique? Is it like HR-oriented or, you know, holding tight like people say you guys do?
No, I think I just need a better makeup artist.
Okay. Well, you look pretty well put together, so I assumed it had to be deliberate. Now, you know what? There's lots of people here today. I didn't think they'd come out, but they have. So let's say hello. Okay, we'll do a roll call. Are you area code 301, Susan?
I am.
Okay. Area code 678-595. Who's that?
Jenny Devon.
Jenny Devon, how are you? Susan, she was a guest a couple of weeks ago.
Fantastic.
Pardon me?
I just said fantastic.
Fantastic. Yeah, it was fantastic. But she is a recruiter who focuses on HR and recruiters. She's selling to HR all the time. She's going to be my backup. I didn't plan on it, but I'm glad she's here. Area code 513-899. There's a couple of 513s. Who are you, 899?
That's me.
Maureen Sheriff, the queen bee of telephone sourcing, namesourcer.com. Want to say hi to Susan?
Hey, Susan.
Hi, Maureen. Glad to hear from you.
You sound enthusiastic. I got to tell
you, I'm going to go look at the picture and see what he's talking about.
Okay. Jenny, do you have a website yet? You don't have a website yet, do you, Jenny, that I should be mentioning?
I do not have a website.
Okay, but you're Jenny D on Twitter. Is that right?
I am Virtual Recruit on Twitter, and I'm Jenny D LinkedIn.
Jenny D LinkedIn, Virtual Recruit on Twitter. Okay,
yes.
Area code 260, Jerry, verbalsummary.com, Jerry Albright.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Jerry.
I like your picture.
Thanks.
There you go. Area code 404. Want to say hi? 404. Okay, you can sleep there. Area code 513-366. I suspect that this is a Cincy recruiter. Am I right?
You are correct.
Okay, are you on my side or Susan's? I want to know that because Susan, she used to be a VP HR. She came over to the dark side, the recruiting side. So she knows something, okay?
And I'm going to be on whatever the right side is.
Oh, come on. Okay.
That's mine, Cincy. That's mine.
Area code 317. Want to say hi?
Yeah, this is the workforce.
Oh, the workforce! What happened to you? Hold on, everybody. I just got to tell you, a hurricane.
I love you.
Yes, we do.
Love you too,
a hurricane blew this guy's house down.
No.
Is it built back yet?
No.
He disappeared.
No, it was spring storms in Indianapolis kind of displaced me for a while. Let's put it that way.
But you still got married.
I did.
Still married?
I am.
What's it, 6 months now or something?
She's a brave, brave woman.
Okay, she's cute. I saw her picture. Susan, do you think this guy has a sexy voice? It's kind of an ongoing thing here.
I like it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, that you know, that, just keep this in mind. You don't have to answer this question yet, but we're talking about selling to HR. When someone with a nice, deep, mellow sound like that calls you up, is that going to have an influence on you?
It's going to make me stop maybe and listen a little more.
Oh, there you go. You see, not all of us are naturally endowed like the workforce. Okay. So, do you have anything important to say before I start asking you some questions?
No. I mean, I'm excited to talk about this. I'm excited to talk about the topic, and I think we've got a lot of people that will be able to add to it, too.
Okay.
I'll also mention that I'm on Twitter at Daily Career Tips and at Susan D. Strayer, so you can follow me both places.
Daily Career Tips and at Susan Strayer. Why do you have two separate Twitter accounts? You want to enlighten us?
Yeah, so at Susan D. Strayer, it's got my middle initial in there, is more for industry-specific and personal updates, kind of a combination for me individually. Daily Career Tips is really just career-focused, just for the job seeker. I try to keep the tweets pretty streamlined.
Now, it's Susan D. Strayer. That means all the time that I've been putting at Susan Strayer on, it's been wrong. Now, is there another Susan Strayer? Is that why you put your middle initial there?
Yes, there's a poet by the name of Susan Strayer, so I try not to get myself confused with her.
Oh, boy, that's unbelievable. Who would think that there were two names like that? You know, just to one more thing, an aside. Your name is Strayer. That sounds like it's English to me, but you're always talking about your dear, sweet Italian grandmother in Philadelphia. How many people in your family are Italian?
I'm 50% Italian, so my whole maternal side is all Italian.
Did you say 60%?
50.
50. We were at something to talk about if it was 60.
But I grew up in Philly, so I spent a lot more time.
You were under the influence of the family. Okay, we'll come back to that later because there's some other things you said about it. But we got to go on now. You are a Myers-Briggs tester, an official tester. Am I right?
That's correct.
Okay. Do all HR people tend to fall in one Myers-Briggs category? That's a personality test.
No, not at all. Part of it depends on what your functional area is, but Myers-Briggs has a lot of detractors, too, so I think it depends on what your feeling is about it.
I don't know. You mean whatever you feel about it, that's what category you fall into?
No, but there are some people that will completely discount their category because of how they feel about it, so they say, that's not me. And the way Myers-Briggs works is that even if you don't agree with where you fall, what your type is, they tell you that you're allowed to pick your own.
Come on. Here's just a quick question then.
Yeah.
Are there any HR people, you know, who if they died tomorrow, you would say she was the life of the party?
Yeah, myself.
Oh, okay. But you're unique, right? You are unique. We're going to find out. Let's put that to the side. Now, Susan, I've heard the only thing an HR person understands is a good punch in the nose. Is that true?
An HR person and a lawyer.
Okay. Is that true? No, really. I was told that HR people, I did a little survey yesterday, they're hard to sell to. They're very detailed-oriented. They're not emotional. They don't get excited. They're not risk-takers. Is that where you'd like to start this discussion? But I'll let you start it wherever you want.
Yeah, I think for the most part, that's a pretty accurate depiction. I think that that's part of the problem is HR as a function is still evolving, and so you really don't know what you're going to get. You know, it's that Forrest Gump chocolate scenario. When you pick up the phone, you call somebody in HR, you really don't know what you're going to get. You could get somebody like me that's not your typical HR professional, but then you could get someone that's very detail-oriented, very matter-of-fact, you know, doesn't have a lot of emotion, and is your typical HR professional.
Okay, so then you did say you're the life of the party, but by implication, you said those other guys aren't, okay? You just did it, but I won't take you to task on that. Where do you want to start this discussion? Should I ask about my questions, or do you have some?
No, let's start there.
Okay, so there's two main issues here. There's, I assume, recruiters selling into HR, and there's job hunters selling themselves or making an approach into HR, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so now your big thing is with HR people or internal recruiters is that they're really, really, really busy. So you say, well, look, don't bug me. Be patient, but don't sit back and do nothing either. So it's like a double bind. The person's going to go crazy. What do they do? How do they walk that tight line?
I always call it persistence meets patience, right? You don't want to be a stalker. You don't want to call 20 times a day, but you have to own the search. So if you're a job seeker, you have to know that the search is yours, that you're one person, whereas the recruiter might be working on 20 positions, and in an economy like this might have hundreds or thousands of candidates for those positions. So you have to own it, and you have to have a good case for why they want to talk to you and why you want to get their attention. Now, that might be because you're proving to them that you're the right person. That's why, for example, when I make resume recommendations and things like that, I always tell people to put that short profile at the top of a resume. Because without that, the recruiter might look at just at the first couple of bullets in your resume and say, forget it, I'm not reading any further. But the profile gives them the whole picture.
You believe in summaries at the top of a resume, yes or no?
Yes.
Bullet points?
in the summary, depending on how experienced you are.
It has to be bullet points. I will not read anything that's a detail requires, you know, detailed reading. However, I also hate all this kind of results-oriented, heads-down worker, time-sensitive stuff. That's meaningless. Am I right? Yes or no?
It's meaningless if there's nothing else that comes with it. If you tell me you're results-oriented and then you tell me an actual result that you got and how you got it, then it matters.
Okay, yeah, but you know what? You don't have space for that in the summary.
You don't have space for that in the summary, but that might get me to keep reading as a recruiter. Now,
okay.
That, all that said, every recruiter is different. That's the problem, is I get job seekers all the time that are saying, tell me the exact way to do it. That's why you have to get to know your recruiter, and you actually have to ask, what's the best way for me to get information to you? And try to get that either in a call, in an interview, or from your contacts in a company, because everybody's different.
Okay, since we're talking about job hunters, let's put that to the side. I think the idea of a summary is good, but you have to answer the questions that the job is asking for. Are you a project manager? How many years experience do you have? Et cetera. Don't lie. Functional resumes are useless. I know there's no job hunters listening to this, so I won't go on about it, but it really, that's what pisses me off. What pisses you off is something about video resumes. You're in love with them, but you're not allowed to use them. Am I right?
I wouldn't say I'm in love with them. I like the idea of them, but I don't think they're ever going to catch on, and most companies aren't allowed to use them. That's correct.
Yeah, they're not going to catch on because they stink. Well, let's go to the panel here. Does anybody else like the idea of visual resumes? Video resumes, rather?
No.
No, who's that?
Jerry.
Carl.
Jerry?
Oh, Carl, sorry.
I'm just kidding. It's Jerry.
Not Carl. Jerry. Yeah, they take too long to watch, right?
There's a million reasons. I won't get into it.
Okay.
I agree with Jerry. I say no. This is Jenny.
Jenny, okay, you say no. What's your reason?
There's a lot of things that you could pull from it as far as legal reasons that you wouldn't want to discriminate against somebody because of what they do say, how they appear on a video resume. Most of my clients do not use them.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's Susan's problem as well. But my issue is you just don't want to watch them anyway. If you want to know someone's ethnic background, you can usually see it from their name, at least here in Toronto. You can. If you're going to be prejudiced, there's a million ways to do it. Okay, so they stink. Anything else? Okay. Here's one other thing with job hunters. You advise people to go into a big company through a lot of different routes at the same time. So they'll be dealing with somebody in HR, and at the same time they'll try to get in touch with the hiring manager in the department that's involved, and maybe some other people as well. That's Jerry doing that. I know that whistle. But, yeah, that seems to me like a good idea. But if you're already involved with HR, they'll say, hey, this guy's trying to go around me. Nobody likes it. Everybody's got an ego. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you definitely don't want to circumvent HR. You see tons of advice out there, and it makes me crazy. Go around the recruiter, ignore the recruiter. But at the end of the day, recruiters have power. Now, that power is going to vary. I should say in-house recruiters when I'm talking about this. But that power is going to vary depending on the size of the company. You know, when I was a recruiter for a mid-sized company, I had all the power because I decided I was the only point of view for resumes, and I decided if your resume got to the hiring manager. So you couldn't circumvent me because I got to make those decisions. In bigger companies, that may or may not be the case. You can use your other contacts, just don't ignore the recruiter, circumvent the recruiter, or try to manage the process yourself. That's usually my party line, if you will.
Okay, so can they call up people they know and say, listen, you talk to Susan for me, or you talk to the hiring manager for me? Like, how does that work? I actually know what you think about this, but I'm going to let you say it. If you don't say it right, I'll come in and say it for you.
Excellent. I think you use those contacts, but you want to use them well. You want to say, hey, can you check in on the status of my application? And then if someone sticks their head in my office and said, hey, I have a great candidate, I'm going to say, you know, who is it? And then I'm going to say, tell me why they're great. And see if that person knows the person well enough. So it's like a little bit of a test as opposed to someone who's just, I'm interviewing them or I have to talk to them because a senior muckety-muck in the company is telling me that I have to. So that's the first line. The second piece is that if you have other contacts, they can give you inside information about how the company works. What are the company's current strategies? What's frustrating in the company right now? They can tell you, oh, you're going to be meeting with so-and-so. Let me tell you a little bit about them. That way you can play to that person's ego. You already know about them, and you're well-prepped. So you got to use your contacts, but use them right. Don't tell them to push on your behalf. Let your resume speak for itself.
Okay, you just said that they should push, but not too hard. Is that right?
Yes, it's about finding the happy medium.
You should get your ammo, your people, your fifth column on the inside, to come and bug HR or the recruiting department on your behalf. Is that right?
Well, I think you have them check in. If you use the word bug, it means it makes you feel like they're going to keep checking back.
I'm speaking metaphorically. Okay, give me a break. Now, let me come to the recruiters. Let me say when the recruiters come in, should they do the same thing? Should they develop a lot of contacts with people inside the company so you keep hearing about, like, Recruiting Animal or Jerry Albright or you wouldn't hear Maureen's name, but Jennifer McClure, Cincy Recruiter. She's great. If six people come and tell you this recruiter has spoken to them recently, are you going to notice?
Absolutely, especially if that recruiter is specialized. So if that recruiter is specialized in sales and marketing positions in Canada, for example, and I have a couple of different sales and marketing professionals that I respect that say, hey, I know we need help in this area. I've talked to this person. She impressed me. Then I'm going to do my research. And there are some companies that, you know, will certify. You know, they'll say, well, we have a certification process for external recruiters. We're going to talk to five, and then we're going to pick two we're going to work with. Obviously, the more recommendations I have, the better. But it's about building that relationship with the person to get the recommendation. You can't cold call five people and then expect five immediate recommendations out of it.
Okay, but you can cold call people. You don't have to know those people in advance.
No, not at all. That's how you build a relationship. You got to start somewhere.
Okay, well, that's what I'm – okay, let me just open it up. Anybody else want to talk about how to sell your services to HR? No? Peanut Gallery? Okay, I gave you a chance. Don't say I'm always cutting you off. Okay, look, Susan, if you're a recruiter, like a salesman, first of all, you believe that to deal with somebody, you'll only deal with niche players. Is that right?
Depends on what the need is. I think that there's a niche for everything. So there's a discipline niche, whether it's sales and marketing, whether it's finance, but there's also a level niche, right, level handled. So, you know, I want an executive recruiter that's got a niche in executives at a particular level handled and above. A $100,000 executive is different from a $200,000 executive. So there are, I do believe in niches, but thinking about niches in different ways.
Okay, but you won't deal with a generalist. Is that right?
I will if it's a lower level position. But for me and the recruiting experience that I've had, I think you do need to have some specialty, especially in particular industries. Retail, for example, for, you know, a retail executive, you really have to understand the business, understand the ins and outs of supply chain and inventory to ask the right questions to vet candidates. So in specific industries, niche is really, really important.
Okay, so it's not enough for me to speak to your hiring manager about what he's looking for in a supply chain director and then go and, you know, feed those same questions back to a candidate?
No, because if you don't know anything about supply chain, that candidate could start talking about something he or she did, a project, and you're not going to know if they're working at a really basic level, if they're parroting back to you what you want to hear, and you won't be able to ask the probing questions that I want you to ask. You don't have to have worked in that industry, but you have to know enough about it or know enough about the discipline.
Yeah, okay, you know what? I tend to agree with you about the niches, but I know myself that I can know nothing about a certain kind of profession. If somebody gives me the right information, I can go out, identify that person. You can usually tell from the way they answer your questions whether they actually know something or not. In the end, you have to bounce it off the hiring manager anyway. Am I right?
That's true. I also think it depends on the relationship you have with your recruiter. If I'm just getting names sourced and resumes sourced to me, then niche probably doesn't matter. But if I'm having you do the search, that's different.
I'm not talking about just names. I'm talking about, you know, people have given me and the general, you know, the recruiters I've worked with, they've given us searches. We go out and find the people. I remember once it was a director of HR for a very big company. I just knew the guy that I recruited a number of people. One guy I knew really stood out. And I had to really push the other recruiter I was working with to send him out to the company. And I didn't know really anything about the kind of business he was doing, but that was the star candidate. They raised the salary, $10,000, in an attempt to get him. Even though he was junior, they weren't lucky. But my point is that even me, when I don't know anything about a job, it makes me nervous to talk to people because I feel like I'm an idiot, but I can usually identify the right people.
I think good recruiters absolutely can. The problem is if you're cold calling me, I don't have anything to base that on. So if you're cold calling me and you don't have a niche specialty, whether it's functional, whether it's industry, whether it's level, then it's hard for me to have something to hang my hat on. Because if I'm working with you for the first time, I can't rely on the fact that you know my company. Even if you don't have a niche expertise, if you know my company, you know my culture, and maybe, you know, I work in a company where culture is, you know, primary, skills are secondary, then I've got something to hang my hat on. But I need somewhere to start.
Give me an example of how I would approach you on that basis. What would I say? I get your phone number. I call up. Hi, Susan.
Well, first, I advise people never to call. I think cold calls are intrusive. I think it doesn't give me a chance to do my research. It doesn't give me a chance to think carefully about how I want to respond or to schedule time to actually talk to you. And it doesn't help you, because if you catch me at a bad time, I might just put you off, not because I'm not interested in talking to you, but because you've caught me at a bad time. There are a lot of people like myself, but, you know, I don't like to screen calls. If the phone rings, I'm going to answer it. And so I don't want to be rude. It's also a lot easier for me to check email than it is to check voicemails. And so I much prefer reaching out to me in a softer manner first rather than phone. But others may be different.
Let's see, because I disagree. In fact, I think voicemail is better than email. I sort of just delete my emails. I get so much garbage. Maybe your system filters it all out. I don't know. Does anybody want to comment on that? What's the best way to approach a cold call, with a voicemail or a direct phone call or email? Anybody want to say something? Jennifer McClure is very sensitive about this. She comes from HR. I'll start with you.
I would say it's best to get a referral. You know,
go ahead.
Make the call for you and tell Susan or someone else why they need to at least talk to you. After that, maybe send an email first and then follow up with a call, as she pointed out, to give her the opportunity to maybe at least click on a link or do some research, so that when you do call, there's some sort of introduction about who you are and why it might be of interest for her to talk to you.
How do you get somebody to call for you? Give me an example.
Almost all of my business is referrals. Existing clients talking to, you know, their friends and relationships who have leadership needs, and they'll say, Jennifer helped me, you should call her. Or they'll
okay,
call
no, that's a spontaneous
say,
referral. That's a spontaneous referral. You're talking about sort of, you know, encouraging to do. Like, let's say I want to deal with Susan, and I've dealt with you, and I say, Jennifer, do I just call you up as a customer, not my pal, and say, Jennifer, I want to deal with Susan Strayer, Susan D. Strayer, not the poet, and I want you to give her a call and tell her how great I am, or to tell her what
that.
I did for you.
I've done that. It works. If you have
it
a relationship
work.
that has a good, strong relationship with someone else that you're looking to connect with, or you feel that you can add value to, absolutely it's the best way to leverage that
and
relationship.
And they don't mind you making that call to them.
Not if they're, you know, if they have the right relationship. If they don't know them, I mean, you need to know who you're dealing with and how well they know each other. If they truly are, you know, strong relationship, then absolutely that's the
okay,
best.
Okay, so you
guys, it's no secret that a referral is better than a cold introduction. I mean, that, obviously.
Jerry, that's theory, though. Does it work in practice? Jennifer's saying yes.
Well, what we're talking
for you?
What we're talking about, though, is when I don't know Susan, and I don't know anybody that knows Susan.
Yeah,
I don't know Susan.
Well, you're probably missing out on knowing Susan then, I would guess.
Potentially, but I'm also, I don't want to damage my brand, to Susan's point earlier, I don't want to damage my brand by making a cold call when she's not interested in talking to me, and now I have a negative impression on me, so that if and when an opportunity does come that I could help her, I'd rather come in at that time.
Well, wouldn't the way that you connect with her determine whether your brand is damaged or not?
It's a negative impression if you call somebody and they don't want to talk to you. That's, I mean, it's not huge, but it's a negative impression.
Because they're too busy. That's what you're saying, right?
Yes.
I always think about it like dating. Blind dates have much less success rate than, you know, if you end up having a relationship with someone you're already friends with, or if you meet someone at a party. The casual introduction is always more successful than the cold, formal, caught me off guard introduction.
Okay.
Jerry, so then we need
out. Yeah, is this important?
Yeah, it is. We need to know somebody that knows you then, Susan?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
It's about finding a way to build a relationship. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I am in conversation right now to work with a vendor who I met at a conference, and we just started talking, and I could tell his approach wasn't, I want your business, whereas other people, you know, you meet me at a conference, you see who I work for, you think, ooh, I want that company name on my client list, and they say, you know, they'll approach me by saying, do you need any diversity training at your organization, or I do this kind of recruiting. Can I help you? Do you have those needs? Instead, they say, hey, I follow you on Twitter, and I saw, you know, a post that you put up, and, you know, I'm not sure I agree. And it turns into a conversation. And that way I get to know them first. Mm-hmm. I get to see their style. I get to know them a little bit better. And that conversation naturally evolves into whether it makes sense for us to do business. And then it allows me to say, hey, what do you do? Tell me about your business. And I'm the one who can say, hey, I'd love to hear more about that. And it becomes more of a relationship, and it's more casual and comfortable to me than someone who just randomly calls me or sends an email that says, you know, dear friend or dear company owner, which, you know, of course, I don't respond to any of those.
Sure.
So hold on a second. Let's talk about mass mailing for a second. Jerry, just put a hold on it for one sec. You get a lot of mass emails?
I get a ton of them, probably anywhere between 3 and 10 a week.
And you don't read them?
I look at them only because I'm curious. I like to see people's approaches, and I like to see, is it just a small company that's desperate right now because of the economy? Is it anybody I know? Because if it's somebody I know, I'm going to email them and say, hey, I just want you to know this approach didn't resonate with me. It might resonate with others, but I wanted to share that feedback.
Does it make a difference if they, you know, inject Dear Susan into it as opposed to Dear Recruiter?
It makes a difference. It shows me that they're doing something personal. But at the end of the day, all of those email systems, whether you use Constant Contact or MyEmma or any of those, all you have to do is put in the first name, last name. I can still tell
it's
a mass email.
So that really doesn't make any difference if they go to that trouble, right?
It makes me feel like at least they're going to that trouble. But I'm usually not going to respond to them anyway.
Okay, so you wouldn't recommend mass mailing approaches to anybody. Is that what you're saying?
Never.
Really? Anybody agree with her on that?
I absolutely agree with Susan. This is Jenny.
I 100% agree with that.
I hate mass email.
Really? Okay. There's a lot of them around. Everybody's using it, right?
And who's getting business from it?
Exactly.
That's my question. People are desperate. I think people are doing it because they're desperate. You know, how else can we get business? And it's a bunch of people sitting around a table saying, let's buy a list. Let's, you know, mass email that list.
They can't be getting any quality business from it.
I think that's
the
key. I think it's quality business.
What about all the email you get about, even I bet you girls get it as well, for penis extensions and stuff like that. You know, you'd be surprised.
Oh.
A lot of people do business with those guys. Okay, but that's not professional business.
I think going back to Susan's whole, comment is that at this point is everybody, whether it's cold call, whether it's referrals, or whether it's mass email, people are at this point throwing everything up against the wall to see what's going to stick because they are so desperate out there.
Completely. And, you know, job seekers are doing the same thing too. That's what's so interesting to me is I think that I give the same advice to job seekers that I would to vendors or recruiters. Don't do a huge strategy of trying to hit everything. You know, volume. Go for quality instead of quantity. Find a couple of leads and dig down in them as deep as you can. Be patient with them. Take the time to build the relationship, and eventually you're going to get in the door, as opposed to sending out, you know, 5,000 emails or 5,000 resumes.
What do I have to say to you to show that I know your culture and your business?
Well, you're not going to say anything to say you know my culture and business until you talk to me first. Especially, you know, the very companies I've worked for, I previously worked for Home Depot. You know, you might say you know the Home Depot culture. One of our biggest pet peeves is people would come in interviews and say, oh, I love shopping at your store. Well, that's great, but that doesn't mean you know the culture just because you shop there. So I'd want you to build a relationship with me. I'd want to talk to you. I'd want to have the opportunity to tell you about my culture. That's a huge pet peeve of mine when people call and say, I know you're cost-cutting and you don't have any positions open and the economy's tough. And I'll say, really? Actually, go to our career site. We do have positions open. And, you know, clearly they haven't done the research. They're making assumptions. And those broad assumptions also show me that you're not interested in building a relationship. You're just
okay, no.
Well,
hold on. What I'm talking about is you said reach out to me through email. And now I ask you, what do I have to say in that email to get you, you know, warmed up to me? Come on.
Well,
good
first,
question.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what?
I thought somebody was jumping in.
Yeah, just ignore him. We're in charge.
You know, for me, it's understanding why they're emailing me. If you're just emailing me for my business, that's one thing. But if you're saying you've got a special going on or you've got one particular candidate that you know is a fit, then those are things that I want to know. Or if you just want to introduce yourself, say, hey, I understand, are you going to this conference? Are you, I'm in your area during this time. I'd love to catch up with you. Then that gives me time to go do my research, understand who you are, and make a decision, and then I can email you back politely and say, you know, I'm sorry I don't have time, and, you know, I'm not sure that it's a fit right now, and I can be honest with you as opposed to leading you down the wrong path. It is like dating a lot sometimes.
Okay, you know, Jenny D, she's very big on networking. She's an executive member of the Society for Human Resource Professionals in her state or municipality, right, Jenny?
Yeah, Yep, in Atlanta.
Okay, so you believe, you know, you guys are calling on crappy phones today. I didn't say anything about it earlier, but everybody's voice is kind of bubbly. Even the work farce, I have to say. But anyway, you guys are all stressing these personal contacts developed over time. Is that how you do business?
That's exactly how I do business. If I wanted to meet somebody in Susan's industry, I'm going to find out where people in hospitality hang out in HR. And that might be Meeting Planners International. That might be Sherm Atlanta. I'm going to make the extra effort to try to meet her in person or to try to meet other people within her company. Going back to Jennifer's point, that will warm introduce me to her or refer me to her.
Okay, let's say you send somebody out to call for you. Like, you know that story, it's an American story about Miles Standish? Isn't that, I can't remember all the names, but he goes out and doesn't he get somebody to introduce, to talk, you know, on his behalf to a girl? I can't remember that story. You guys know what I'm talking about?
No.
No clue.
Okay.
Must be a Canadian.
Speak to this girl for me, or Cyrano de Bergerac, same thing, right? And
one of those spam email messages yet or something that I'm not reading.
What do you do? The person goes out and says, you know, you're both called Jennifer. Jennifer. So you both say, listen, Jennifer's a great recruiter. I dealt with her. You know, she's told me she's interested in doing business with you. And I just thought I'd let you know that, you know, she's going to give you a call. She's really good. Is that how what happens? I really don't have an understanding of it. It seems so awkward.
Yeah.
Is that what you do?
You would not. I wouldn't want someone to introduce me to somebody that way. The purpose is not to introduce me to necessarily do business. The purpose is to introduce us if you think that we have something in common,
mm-hmm.
or there might be a reason for us to connect, to get to know each other first.
Totally.
Yes.
Nobody
I'm
really
have
wants to have to meet somebody who wants to do business and do a sales call. If you're my relationship and you think it makes sense, if I call you and say, hey, I want to meet Susan, I think, you know, I really like the stuff on her blog, I like the stuff she tweets, whatever that is, I'd like to meet her as a person, get to know her, get to know something about her company. You know, certainly, I mean, my ultimate goal is I want to do business, and hopefully she does too, but we first need to decide if it makes sense for us to connect.
Do you know the recruiters I know, they get a candidate who's clearly a fit for somebody they've got a strong background, a certain area, easy to define. They look up all the companies that hire that kind of person. They get on the phone, and they market that person. Is that a taboo? We'll start with Susan, the guest.
For me, I think it's a huge taboo, but it might be because I've worked for larger companies, a couple Fortune 500 companies. Smaller companies, that might work. But it's a taboo for me because when I think about you cold calling and saying I have this candidate, I'm going to think to myself, well, on what basis, besides the fact that he knows that I work for this industry or this company, does he think that this candidate's a fit? And that's what I'm going to be concerned about.
He's got 10 years of internal auditing in the construction products industry. You're working at Home Depot. Maybe there's a connection there. Isn't it obvious?
Well, it might be, but I don't want to pay you then. I mean, I would rather, if you're just going to call me up and you found a candidate for whatever reason, then I'm going to want sourcers in my company that can do that. If I'm going to pay you, I want to pay you because I already know you or because you
Jesus.
Have experience or we've got a relationship.
Jerry, am I living on the planet Mars? Is that so ridiculous what I just said?
No, I personally think that's a good approach. Now, maybe I'm way off base. But,
well, I mean, I think, too, it's different for every company. This is one of the reasons I wanted to talk specifically, too, about some of the big companies is that bigger companies tend to have larger recruiting functions, tend to have a lot of the sourcing and things like that in-house, and tend to have more experience working with more recruiters. If I'm in a smaller company, you know, a couple thousand people or less, and I don't have a big HR team and I've never worked with a recruiter, then that strategy is going to work. So I'm speaking more about, you know, my experience specifically. And part of it is if you get some of the big companies on your client list, that's also impressive to me. If I know that you're also working with other of my competitors, or I know that there are big companies that you've worked with, then I know you've had success with them from a relationship perspective, and I'm going to feel more comfortable working with you.
Okay,
yeah,
hold on,
it certainly is a different perspective, I appreciate that.
Yeah, maybe it's because you're talking about giant companies. Area code 111, want to say hi, want to say anything? You haven't had a chance. Somebody who's calling in on a service, like an internet service, I assume, all the numbers are one. That's your chance. Speak up now if you want to. Area code 707, you want to say hi? It's okay if you don't say hi. See if I care. What's the next question?
Can I ask a question?
You've been talking a lot, but go ahead.
I haven't asked any questions. So I can ask one?
Yeah.
Oh, man. No, I don't even remember what it was.
Okay. Okay, hold on. You want
I'm just
to talk
wondering about how frequently this approach gets you in front of a new customer with all of the research that seems to be taking place, the networking and meeting people at social events and at the SHRM lunch. I mean, it seems like it would take 3 months just to finally get yourself in position to say hello to somebody. And frankly, in this kind of an economy, I think you need to cover a lot more ground than that. And that's just my perspective.
Well, in this kind of economy, we're back to if every recruiter out there is cold calling and blind emailing people, they're sick of it. I mean, there was a post on Fistful of Talent yesterday from a reader about, you know, basically it's all my phone rings off the hook all the day with recruiters calling me. It's damaging the brand. You don't want to do that now because they're getting calls from everybody. You have to spend this time kind of being out there developing relationships. You know, business is down. Business is down for everybody. It's relationship building time, and that's the way we're going to get business.
The other piece I'd add to that is, to me, it's much more important to do business with someone I trust, and it's hard to trust someone who approaches me with the only interest in doing business. Now, I know we're a capitalistic economy. I know that you're not building a relationship with me because you think I'm cool and you want to just be my friend, and I know that business is your ultimate goal. But if you come out of the door and it's just all about business, then you know, it's going to be harder for me to gain that trust and have a relationship with you. And the more comfortable I am, the better our relationship, the more honest I can be with you.
Isn't it disingenuous, though, to start off with, hey, how about the Steelers? Wasn't that a great Super Bowl?
It's disingenuous if the person doesn't care and they're not interested in it.
Yeah.
Jerry, can I ask a question? Have you ever
You're after Jerry?
No.
I'm in charge.
No.
Animal.
I have a quick question. Have you, or has anybody on the phone done business with somebody eventually? You might build a great relationship with them sooner than later, but they can't do business with you now. But HR people are nomadic. And while they may not be able to do business with you at company A, when they move to company B, they may give you a call and say, hey, guess what? You know, I need your services. So it's to the relationship point, I think it's extremely invaluable to have that just in place and have that friendship before anything else.
Absolutely. And in fact, that happens to me all the time, especially because in HR, your job changes. So when I was just a recruiter, the types of vendors I was working with were very different than now when I really oversee a function. And I am looking at external recruiters, but I'm also working with employment brand vendors. I'm working with compliance vendors. And so absolutely. And that's where the genuine nature really comes in.
Well, I hope I'm not being labeled as the anti-relationship recruiter.
Not at all.
I mean,
let me ask all the relationship types here.
I have some HR people coming to my house for a big party, and we probably won't even talk about business.
Then that's
February
great.
February 28th, you're all invited if you want.
Really?
To yeah.
Where do you live?
Indiana.
Send me your address.
Yeah. All right. No,
did
I
you
can
put
certainly
that out,
appreciate
Jerry?
That. I
did
mean,
you put that invite out for everyone?
I don't know if I want to.
No? Okay.
Yeah, okay, come on.
Open
house,
but Jerry.
Hold on, Susan.
I have
Susan,
a question.
Susan.
Can I ask a question?
Okay, Maureen, go ahead.
All right, Susan said before that if somebody calls her up with a special, she'd be more...
Yeah, I was interested in that, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, she'd be more likely to talk to her. Susan, what kind of special would get your attention?
Well, if I'm working on, you can go on like our career site, and you know I'm not speaking on behalf of my company, but for any company, you can go on their career site. You can track how long positions have been open, and let's say I work for a retail company, and you see that there's a position that's been open in a certain region for a really long time, and you let me know that you've got, you know, you're willing to discount or you're willing to offer your services that normally go for X amount, you're willing to do it for Y. That might pique my attention if it's correlated with a particular need you know I have. So
it's starting off as a business call.
It is.
A business introduction.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I said before, you know, those are the limited things that would pique my interest outside of building a relationship.
You know what that means, Jerry? Hold on. That means money talks. Relationship walks when the money talks. Go ahead. Sorry.
So it sounds like, Susan, you're saying that if you can tell that there is a value, then you'll explore that a little sooner than if it was just, hey, let's be friends.
Well,
I love you.
It depends on the context in which you're reaching out to me.
Okay.
If I meet you at a conference or you send me a direct message on Twitter, you know, saying something about my post, I love debating. So if you tell me you didn't like my post and tell me why, maybe we would trade a few emails. Maybe I start reading your blog. I get to know you. That's one way to get to know me, and then maybe I might reach out to you for business. But if you're doing, you know, individual emails, maybe not the mass email, but you're doing a little bit of research, you send me a special that is correlated to a need you know I have, then I'm going to be more willing to pay attention to that. It's not that it's all about relationships. It's just that for me, the best business success I've had has been with vendors and recruiters who I've developed a relationship with.
Okay, let me ask you a quick question about that. When you say you have to trust somebody, what do you mean when you have to trust them? What are you talking about?
Well, they're going to go in and act on behalf of my company. And so every company I've worked in has a really specific culture. And nowadays, especially with the way PR has changed, you know, you can talk or act on behalf of somebody all the time. And so it's important to me that I trust you, that you're going to talk and act on behalf of my company in the right way. Because if you don't, if you send an email, it can get back to my PR people. They can find it in an RSS feed. And then they can come knocking on my door saying, who is this guy and why is he working on behalf of our company? And so it helps me to continue to maintain that relationship with you. So, you know, I've put external recruiters through our orientation before because that way they get to know the company really well. You know, I've sent them on those that I have really good relationships with. I'll, you know, connect them with particular people in the field so that they get to know the business better.
How many relationships would you say you have that are of that category?
Probably four.
Wow.
So not many.
Okay.
But it's also, you know, it's different at every company that I've worked at. You know, other companies I've worked at, I've had as many as six or seven. But when I'm working with recruiters, I usually don't want that many because it's too much time for me to connect with all of them.
Sure.
Area code 202. Do you want to say hi to Susan? No. Okay.
Hey,
area code...
Jessica Lee from Fistful.
Jessica Lee, another HR person. Do you want to get off your speakerphone?
Oh, yeah, okay.
You want to say hello to Susan? You
hey,
have
Jessica.
A question?
Hey, Susan. I owe you an email back so we can have some coffee.
Yeah, right. Oh, the relationship stuff, right?
Hey,
well,
there you go. It's a great example because that's how Jessica, you know, and I found each other on Twitter, and we, you know, exchanged a couple of direct messages, and we talked about getting together for coffee, and you know, there's no rush, and that's
and
what I like about it.
6 months later. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's no rush.
Well, then I'd like to have coffee with you too. Then sometime down the road.
Me too.
We'll meet an animal. How about that for a coffee?
Yeah. There's not too many Jennifers on today. Jenny Lee.
Yes.
I'm getting confused. Do you want to say something to Susan before the show's over?
No, I completely agree with a lot of her points. She's doing a great job.
You meant Jessica
Lee.
Jessica Lee, not Jennifer Lee.
Jessica Lee, I'm getting confused. I'm not drunk. Area code 561. Do you want to say hi to not Jennifer and not Jessica, Susan?
Hey, animal, it's Jason Gorham with Shark Strike.
Jason Gorham, are you on today on a broadcast of your own open mic on recruitingblogs.com?
I am, yes. So
what
if anybody
wants
to come over and chat.
What time?
I am on from 1:30 to 2.
Okay, fine. Now, listen, I want to talk to you before we're finished because I was thinking of you. I didn't want to mention it. When Susan was talking, you send out tons of mass emails for Shark Strike. I get tons of mass emails from you. Susan, do you get mass emails from Jason? Jason, can you handle the tough feedback? I know you can.
I'm not sure I've ever gotten one from Shark Strike.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Animal, I don't know if you're what type of mass emailing that we're doing. If you are, I do apologize, but
I don't mind. I know you.
Hey, I just wanted to make a couple points. Good discussion. Susan, I do agree with a lot of what you're saying. However, I'm a little bit confused. And this is why. So I have done business with Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 6 months to do business with them, and I made $300. So on the flip side, I am in complete agreement with you have to understand your audience, and you don't go into a call with a hard pitch.
Yep.
But on the But one of your other comments was that you are not going to respond to emails or introductions. So I guess my question is, how does one introduce themselves to you, and then how do you get, you know, so if I were to either call you or email.
Jason, you don't have all year. Get it out.
So what's
all right, well,
what's the best introduction that you like?
Quiet. Let her talk now, okay? You got 5 minutes left. Go ahead.
First thing you have to do is understand who you're talking to. So if I'm just a recruiter, what I'm going to want to hear and what I'm going to need is different than if I'm in the role I'm in now or I'm actually overseeing the function. And so, for example, if you're a recruiter and you're recruiting very specific regional positions, don't call a person to corporate headquarters. Figure out who the regional person is and work with them. And that's the first piece, is understanding the structure of HR. Going to the top is important, but no SVP or VP wants to work with a small regional recruiter. They want to push that work down to the region. Teams. So that's the first piece. Second piece is if you just want to, reach out, do some research first. Find me online, figure out where I'm blogging, figure out where I'm Twittering, and start to connect with me that way. That allows me to do some research. When people start following me on Twitter, I'm able to do a little bit of research, figure out who they are, like what I did with Jessica, and that took me to Fistful Talent, and I was able to read some of her posts and thought, this is someone I'd love to continue a conversation with. But it's because some of her topics are more strategic, and that's more of what I'm focused on. If I was working just as a recruiter and, what you had to offer was more tactical, then I'm going to be more interested in talking to you. So you've got to really know your audience. Home Depot is a huge organization. They get 17 million applications a year. And so, going to the top and going to corporate works if you're recruiting for corporate positions. But if you want to go regional,
is that true? A true number? Or are you just using that facetiously? 17.
That was
million?
The number that they used. That was a true number. Now that's also that includes, from what I understand, repeat applications. So someone, the same person applying to multiple stores in a market. So with that kind of volume, you can imagine that the people at corporate
Let me interrupt. Okay, you're just repeating yourself now. First of all, you know what? 99% of the people I'm going to deal with are not on Twitter. And 90% of them don't know what a blog is, and certainly most of them aren't blogging. So you keep referring to this online social life that most people aren't involved in, right?
Well, I think it depends on who your audience is. Certainly most people are involved in it, you're right, but how else can you interact with these people? What else are they doing? Are they going to local events? And if that's not the case and your only option is email, then you've got to do some research about the person, find out, make sure you're hitting at the right person, corporate versus regional versus, frontline.
Okay, we're running out of time. I want to get some more questions in. When you're sending email, should it be plain text to get through the junk mail filters, or should it be a fancy-looking email?
Please just send me a plain text email that shows that you're emailing me and you're not emailing 500 people at once.
Oh, really?
Short.
I mean, that's an advantage. If it's, I see it.
So use blind carbon copy animal.
But if you use BCC, you can't say Dear Susan. And you can't really customize it to me.
Yeah.
And BCC is lazy. We can tell when you blind copy someone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know if putting your name in it and a little something special about you really does get a big response. I noticed you didn't mention, or maybe it's irrelevant, Jason said, he spent 6 months developing the relationship and got $300 worth of business. I guess maybe charges too little or something like that. What's the story there? What do you think about that?
Well, I think I'd have to have a deeper conversation to understand why. Was he working with the right person? What was the follow-up like? Was he, again, being a broad recruiter, or did he develop a niche? If you've
How
just got one candidate.
I think that's more of a big business. Big business for the website and mid to small business for the bank account.
Well, I'll also say, too, I mean, this gets back to our original conversation about the broad approach versus the individual deep relationship approach. If you're just, if you don't have a niche specialty and you're just calling up and saying, I have one candidate, and even if that candidate's successful, they're going to pay you, but there's nothing else for them to build a relationship on and keep working with you. They're going to say, great, if you have other candidates, feel free to send them.
So
but there's nothing to connect
them. If somebody met you at a conference, first of all, it sounds like everybody should be going to conferences. It sounds essential talking to the people on this show, to me at least. That's the impression I get. But if someone met you and said, Susan, I'm the recruiting animal, and I want your business, you wouldn't be impressed by that, right?
No.
What if I said, I deserve your business?
I would say, say, wow, that's quite an ego. Why do you think you deserve my business?
And then I would tell you why. I would give you my sales pitch and tell you about all the great things I've done and can do.
But it starts us off on the wrong foot. I would think, gosh, here's a person that I'm going to have who's going to have trouble taking my advice. If I tell him I don't like a candidate and I have my reasons, he's going to push and push and push because he told me he deserves my business and he's got an ego bigger than Philadelphia.
Okay, if you're at the coffee shop with Jessica Lee, you're both nice-looking girls, and someone makes a pitch at you, you're not going to say yes at that point. If he said, I'd like to meet you later, you'll say no, right?
What kind of pitch are we talking about?
It depends if you buy your coffee or not.
But you know what? You make a good point, Animal. It's Jessica, because, you know, this is like a lame analogy, but I think it works because, you know, it's the same way that you would approach a strange person that you find attractive that you want to take out on a date. Or maybe you want to take them home. Are you going to go right up to them and just say, hey, I want to take you home? I mean, it doesn't work like that. And I think that you could probably put that lens on, too, when you're approaching a potential company that you want to do business with. You can't just flat out go up to them and say, hey, I want to do business with you and take you home. I mean, it just doesn't work like that.
Okay, so if I see somebody in the elevator and I want to ask Echo, and I want to ask her out, it helps if I wait till I see her in the elevator a few times.
No, it helps to have some small talk. You don't just look at her and say, well, you go out with me. Strike up a conversation first.
Is that what you've been doing wrong, Animal?
I don't
all
know. I work for somebody else I know who's on the line.
You have to do Match.com. Match.com, baby.
But even with Match.com, you have information about the person. You know,
yes.
You've got something
it's
to go off of.
I'm like crazy.
You
yeah.
start out with a conversation over email before you actually meet in person.
Yeah, and you're not going
to
reach.
You have to have common ground.
Okay,
exactly.
Susan,
common ground, Animal. Did you hear that?
Your common ground. 3 minutes. You have a wrap up statement. Would you like to make a powerful statement to people, Susan?
I'm sorry.
Sell a book. Sell your book. Your book sounds good.
Thank you. My book's called The Right Job Right Now, and I think it hits at what I've been trying to get across today. It's finding the right happy medium between your strategy. If you go one way excessively, you know, and only do mass emails and try to hit everything, or you focus on stalking and you just keep cold calling me and sending me emails, neither of those strategies is going to work. And I'm always very frank about it. It's what Animal says at the beginning, help me help you. It's the same way that I am in my book with job seekers. I want to provide real information so that you can make good decisions. And in this case, it's know your audience, make sure that you do the research about the business to figure out how it works, and really find common ground. I mean, that's the key, something that can start a conversation or relationship. Give me something that's going to gain trust. And
if
in my case,
it's a niche. If my grandmother is Italian, should I let you know?
Absolutely. That gives us something
You're
to talk about.
No way. No
yeah.
way.
It gives
what
us common ground.
What does that have to do with anything?
Because it's going to start a relationship. It's going to start a conversation.
You're
and it'll also give you
like
some...
You're not wanting to do business, Animal.
No, not at all. But think about the people that you're most successful with. You don't pick up the phone when you call anybody and immediately start talking about business. You say, how was your weekend? How's your day going? There's always something. And the more you get to know somebody, the more, you know, like, think about...
I get the last question. I always think giving out Christmas gifts and all that stuff is insincere. You're doing it just because you're doing business with somebody to kiss their ass, not because you like them. Am I right or wrong? Yes or no?
Yes.
You're wrong.
I'm wrong. Let's do a survey. Come on.
You're right.
I'm right. Everybody says I'm right? Gee whiz, what do you know?
You're wrong.
Thanks for coming, everybody. Thank you, Susan. Goodbye.
If they came into an interview with me and they were wearing a collared shirt and there was a big plume of hair kind of sticking out the back, you know, I might say, hey, you know, listen, you know, this client over here, you know, they, you know, you might want to, here, I'll trim it for you. How about that? We'll compromise. I'll get out my razor right there. I've been known to shave candidates' heads right on the spot. They did it to me in boot camp, so I'm not scared to do it myself. And, you know, I mean,
okay.
there's something about interviewing a candidate when you shave his head right there that, I mean, yeah, it's a new level of respect. You know, you got to do crazy things as a recruiter.
A new level of respect.